The Free Library of Philadelphia is proud to present a podcast from our award-winning author events series, recorded live at the Parkway Central Library on the Benjamin Franklin Parkway. To learn more about the Free Library, our unique and inspiring collections, and how your contribution can help our programs and services for the community, please visit freelibrary.org.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the Free Library of Philadelphia. My name is Laura Kovacs, and I'm honored to introduce our guest this evening. Zakiya Dalila Harris is the author of the New York Times bestseller, The Other Black Girl, a thriller in which a young black editorial assistant slowly realizes there are more sinister forces in her publishing house than the microaggressions that hurt her career. It was chosen as Good Morning America and Read with Marie Claire book club picks, and was selected as one of the best books of 2021 by Time, The Washington Post, Vogue, People, and NPR, among many others. She spent nearly 3 years at Knopf Doubleday, first as an editorial assistant, then as assistant editor, before leaving to write what the New York Times called an immersive and genre-bending debut novel. This evening, she'll be joined in conversation with Liz Moore, best-selling author of Long Bright River, The Words of Every Song, Heft, and The Unseen World. Please join me in welcoming our guests to the Free Library.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, Zakiya. Nice to be on stage with you.
You as well. Thank you so much for doing this, and thank you to the Free Library for having me.
Yeah.
And for coming out. Thank you for coming out. Yeah. Thank you so much.
Yeah. I just learned that this is Zakiya's first time to Philadelphia since looking at colleges, maybe?
Yes, perhaps.
Just a couple years ago, though. Right?
No. Yeah. It's been more than a decade, but yeah, it feels like forever.
And she has to come and go really quickly, but I would like, personally, like for you to come back another time.
I would love that.
Yeah. I think you should plan on that.
For sure.
All right. Next book. Maybe before the next book.
Yes. Hopefully before.
So I wanted to invite Zakiya to begin by maybe just kind of giving as much context as you feel is necessary to orient the readers to the audience in the book, and then maybe just read for a bit, and then I'll have a conversation with you, and then you can have a conversation with Zakiya.
Sounds good. Hi, everyone, again. My name is Zakiya Dalila Harris. I am the author of, I guess it's obvious, The Other Black Girl. So there are a lot of things going on in this book, so I'm going to try to narrow it down into a few lines. But essentially, it primarily follows a young black woman named Nella Rogers. She's been the only black person working in a very white publishing house for the last 2 years or so. So she's really excited when another black woman named Hazel starts working next to her. She's like, okay, finally, I have an ally in the office. I have someone who can, you know, we can braid each other's hair. Like, not really, but like, she's just very excited to have someone who gets it. But of course, there's no story without conflict, and things do not go as well as she thinks they will go. And the story goes along after that. So I won't give too many spoilers. But yeah, also unfolding alongside that story is the story of three other black women. And all of them are also tied to the very white world of publishing in different ways. They're different ages. But essentially, all four of the women in this book have to decide a lot of hard things of whether or not, you know, they are going to sell out, whether or not they're going to do certain things in order to climb the corporate ladder, because as we all know, there are certain sets of rules that go along with the corporate ladder. So there's that, but it's also, I think it can be funny. There's horror, there's a little bit of sci-fi in it. So that's the book in a rather big nutshell. So I'm going to read from just chapter one. You don't really need to know any context, but this chapter one, the little bit I'm going to read is from Nella's point of view. July 23rd, 2018, Wagner Books, Midtown Manhattan. The first sign was the smell of cocoa butter. When it initially crept around the wall of her cubicle, Nella was too busy filing a stack of pages at her desk, aligning each and every one so that the manuscript was perfectly flush. She was so intent on completing this task, Vera Perini needed everything to be flush, always, that she had the nerve to ignore the smell. Only when it inched up her nostrils and latched onto a deep part of her brain did she stop what she was doing and lift her head with sudden interest. It wasn't the scent alone that gave her pause. Nella Rogers was used to all kinds of uninvited smells creeping into her cubicle, usually terrible ones. Since she was merely an editorial assistant at Wagner Books, she had no private office, and therefore no walls or windows. She and the other open space assistants were at the mercy of a hard-boiled egg or the passing of gas. They were often left to suffer the consequences for what felt like an hour afterward. Adjusting to such close proximity had been so difficult for Nella during her first few weeks at Wagner that she'd practiced breathing through her mouth even when it wasn't called for, like when she was deciding between granolas at the grocery store or when she was having sex with her boyfriend Owen. After about 3 months of failed self-training, she had broken down and purchased a lavender reed diffuser that had the words "Just Breathe" scrawled across its front in gold cursive letters. Its home was the far corner of her desk, where it sat just beneath the first edition of Kindred that Owen had given her shortly after they started dating. Nella eyed the gold foil letters and frowned. Could it have been the lavender diffuser she smelled? She inhaled again, craning her neck upward so that all she could see were the gray and white tiles that lined the ceiling. No, she'd been correct. That was cocoa butter, all right. And it wasn't just any cocoa butter. It was brown butter, her favorite brand of hair grease. Nella looked around. When she was sure the coast was clear, she stuck her hand into her thick black hair and pulled a piece of it as close to her nose as she could. She'd been proudly growing an afro over the last 3 years, but the strand still landed unsatisfyingly between her nose and her cheek. Nonetheless, it felt close enough to tell her that the brown butter smell wasn't coming from her own hair. What she was smelling was fresh, a coat applied within the last hour or so, she guessed. This meant one of two things. One of her white colleagues had started using brown butter, or more likely, since she was pretty sure none of them had accidentally stumbled into the natural hair care aisle, there was another black girl on the 13th floor.
Thank you so much. This book is amazing.
Oh. Thank you.
Because we are here in celebration of the release of the paperback, I imagine that a large percentage of you probably have already had the chance to read this book, but for anybody who hasn't had the pleasure yet, what I love about it is that it tells a really good story. It brings in a lot of very topical, relevant themes in a way that is sneaky in the sense that like it's you don't sort of notice them as you read them, and then at the end you're like, wow, that book was about so many things. And also it is really multi-genre, which is something that I'd love to talk to you about during our conversation.
Yeah.
So I always ask the same thing to anybody I interview, and that is, what was the first thing that arrived to you? What was the first spark of this book? Whether it was a character, a setting, a problem, whatever.
Yeah.
What was it?
It was actually the smell of cocoa butter. No. metaphorically, though, it actually was because, so like my main character, Nella, and you'll see throughout tonight that there are a lot of similarities between us. It's a little weird. But like my main character, Nella, I worked in book publishing. I was an editorial assistant for a while, and then I was promoted to assistant editor. And right around the time that promotion happened, I was washing my hands in the bathroom, minding my own business, as one does, and another black woman came out of the bathroom stall, and I was like, who is she? Because where I worked was mostly white people, definitely on my level. And so I had this thought of like, oh, she must be working here. She had a lanyard. I like did the whole thing, you know, like scoped every part of who she was out. But I'm also very, I can be very shy. I'm an introvert in a lot of ways. And I've kind of tried to catch her eye in the mirror And nothing happened. Bottom line is nothing happened. We did not have a black girl moment in the bathroom. So I went back to my desk and I was like, why didn't we have a black girl moment in the bathroom? Was that me? Was that her? Like, she didn't even seem like, I feel like I was exuding some kind of energy, but she was not exuding anything. And so I went back to my desk and the idea for this book, the germ of this book came to me, which was, what if there are two black women working in a white workplace and stuff gets weird? Like, that was the only, that was the main thread for me. And I remember messaging my good friend from my MFA program because I had studied creative writing right before starting publishing. And I told her my idea and she was like, yeah, do it. She's like my real life Malaika. And I was like, okay. And so I started writing it at my cubicle, probably on my Knopf stationery, because I was just so into this idea. And as I kept writing, I found myself wanting to put myself into it. And a couple months later, I quit because I was like, I need to pursue this. I'd also been really tired of working in publishing, though. Mm-hmm. It was a lot of things.
Mm-hmm. So once you made that decision to quit and really throw yourself into the writing work full time, what was the actual process of writing the book like? I read, I think maybe an interview with you in which I believe you said it, you substantially wrote the book in about 6 months. Is that correct or not so much?
Yeah, like roughly. Yeah. So I quit in March 2019. Mm-hmm. I'd had the idea in January. Mm-hmm. And then I was querying agents by October or November. Okay. So it was like kind of my literal baby I carried. And of course there was a lot more work that went into it in the next few months and year, but the process was hard because, well, I should also add that my partner at the time, who's now my husband, moved in with me. We hadn't been dating for very long. And I was like, I'm going to write this book. And he's like, sure. not really having known what I'd written. And this was I'd tried writing another book and it didn't work out. But that was partly why I was able to quit. Because in New York, it's hard. It's hard to live off of, part-time jobs, and that's what I was doing. I started working at a cupcake shop because I had barista experience, and that was too hard. I ended up quitting because my frosting looked like poop. And it was like a very well-known cupcake shop in Soho. But I did start doing something else that was really good for me, which was teaching creative writing to kids.
That's cool.
And that really brought me back to, because that's when I loved writing as a kid. That's when that first happened for me. And so being around kids who were discovering this love for the first time was like infectious and really helped me hone in on my own book. But I was staying up late at night. I was waking up early in the morning before I went into the cupcake shop when I was still there. It was like a lot of moving parts. And it's hard. I still can't believe I did it because, like, it's really hard to write a book, as you know, and you've done it multiple times.
But, you know, it sounds to me like every writer I know talks about having one book they write where it's like they've been storing up the material and processing it subconsciously for so many years that when it arrives, it's almost fully formed. Like it's sort of like descending from your brain onto the page.
Totally.
Six months is not a long period of time to write a book. It sounds like you were really ruminating on this material for a long time.
For sure. Yeah. And I had done my nonfiction, I did a concentration in nonfiction at the New School, and I had been waitlisted for fiction actually. And so at first, when I started the program, I had kind of dabbled in nonfiction in undergrad and was kind of planning to write about other people. But then, it was 2015, 2014. The world's still on fire, but like what was going on? I had just moved to Brooklyn. I'd been at school in a bubble in Chapel Hill and like very much was now in this new space where I was around more black people. I was seeing protests everywhere. Of course, Eric Garner had happened. There's just so much going on. And I ended up writing about myself and my own experiences and kind of questioning choices that I'd made about relaxing my hair for more than a decade, about my childhood growing up in mostly white spaces in Connecticut. And so all of those things I'd written essays about and been ruminating on when I was like 21. 20. And so then a few years later, I'd already had this framework because I knew part of what would cause that tension between Nell and Hazel was this anxiety that she's not Black enough. And that was something that I could absolutely relate to. And so that really is part of the engine for Nella's story.
Did you work from an outline or did you just do the headlights, whatever the quote is?
You know, pantsing?
Pantsing.
Is that what they call it?
Yeah.
Pantsing? No, you know, I did pants.
That sounds weird.
No, but I didn't have an outline. And I mean, I went back after I'd written a few drafts of it. I did go back to make sure, because it's a puzzle.
It jumps around in time.
It's a lot of jumping around. There's four characters. But I don't know. I'm thinking about my next book and if I want an outline, because I did appreciate parts of that for when I was going back. And but I don't know. My brain doesn't work that way sometimes.
One of the things that this book does, and I'm going to be careful not to spoil anything, but
it's hard.
You do such a good job of misleading readers in a way that doesn't feel cheap. I was like, oh, this character is that character in a different moment in her life. And then I was completely wrong. And then I was like, oh, this character is this character's daughter. There was just all this stuff.
I love to hear that.
It is like a math problem. And because I lately have been writing books that are sort of like thrillery or crimey, I really appreciate how hard that is on your brain as you write it and how hard it is to keep track of all the threads, the seeds that you plant that then have to blossom later and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like a Jenga of who knows what when. And you always want to be a few steps at least ahead of the reader. And I know that's such a good way to put it, where it's like you want the reader to be kind of making guesses that are wrong, but also satisfying to they make sense at the end. And I feel like that's the most frustrating thing about a story and any kind of medium. It's when it's but wait, this feels too easy. This feels cheap. And so I appreciate that so much.
All right. A moment ago, you mentioned being a young writer, like a child writing. Can you talk to me about your earliest experiences with writing? Is it something you always loved?
Yeah, for sure. I mentioned earlier I was I am an introvert. As a young person, I was very, very timid. And so writing was one of the things, reading and writing were the things that really I was drawn to. But it's also my family. My older sister is a writer. My dad is a writer. He teaches journalism at a university in Connecticut, and he also had a column for the Hartford Courant and the New Haven Register for a while, actually. And so seeing him writing and grading papers at the table when I was a kid was just something that I was around it all the time. And he was very much encouraging me and my sister to write in the way that's do this, but very much this just opens doors for you. And if you love it and you get to do this, it's important to love what you do. And so having that understanding, especially when I quit my job, my mom was a little more terrified. She's like, but insurance. And I was like, yeah. But my dad was like, yeah, Z, you go. And of course my mom very quickly was like, I understand. But yeah, having that kind of support around me was really important. And also just my dad's writing was a lot about race and things like that, that as a young person I didn't necessarily appreciate, because I was very much my friends, we don't have any problems. I've never had these things happen to me that have happened to my dad. And now it's an interesting kind of full circle where it's but these things are still so very present today. And it took me until I was, again, in my early 20s to get out of my bubble and kind of see this is why this is so important. This is why my dad's always been saying, write Black characters, write you, because no one else will.
I imagine that your mom is okay with your decision at this
point.
Just checking.
She's great. She has 13 copies of the hardcover.
Yeah, it would be hard not to be. All right. As someone who formerly worked in publishing and is now an author, now that you have seen through the mirror and you have been in both roles, is there anything that you feel you know sort of you have a new perspective on about either role from having been in both settings?
Yeah. I mean, I think for me, so when I was an assistant, I didn't necessarily see the edits process as closely. Like, I knew that there were conversations, and I was sometimes in those conversations, and but I was never quite, like, on the page on a micro level because I was juggling, like, 14 titles between my two bosses. And so I didn't really know just what that dynamic was necessarily like, and I have had such a wonderful editing experience with both my agent and my editor where, like, it's just so fun. Like, it doesn't feel like work at all in this way that, like, school never felt. Like, school always felt like it's kind of, even in my MFA, it was, like, the workshop vibe was different. But to have someone who's genuinely, like, just here for it from the beginning and ready to, like, work through it with you, that was something that was very, not surprising. I don't know why I was surprised, but just, I was surprised how comfortable I felt.
Yeah.
Just, like, opening up. Because it is a very personal process. And yeah, I mean, I guess the pandemic definitely was something I did not, like, it just completely came out of left field in the sense of, like, I was not a big social media person at all. Like, I had 20, 50, between that, like, followers on Twitter before. And so then, so right after the book sold in February 2020, the pandemic hit. And suddenly I felt this pressure to be, it's like, no one's going to care about reading, but I got to just, like, be online and be present. And so finding that kind of balance between being out there and self-promoting in a way that I've never self-promoted in my life, that's been a new thing that I hadn't really thought about before.
Do you have any more sympathy for authors that you might once have found annoying when you were working in publishing?
Yes.
Like, I was thinking there's this amazing moment in the book where an author keeps rejecting every cover that the author is given. And, like, after five covers, the in-house designer is like, no more. No, I will not.
Yes.
Like, you were then subsequently in the position of receiving cover designs. What was that like for you? And did you rethink that character?
I like to that's true. I like to think that because so editorial assistant positions, I feel like it's important to say, like, and this isn't the same for everyone, but I definitely feel like you're there to really support everybody else.
Sure.
And so, like, you're making sure everyone's happy, the publicists and the production people and the editors and the agents, everyone else. And so I feel like I was I tried to go into it very conscious of that and being, like, not too demanding and not asking for too much. But the cover, I mean, I don't know if we can segue to the cover.
I love hearing authors talk about their covers. It's like my favorite thing. Yeah.
So unlike that horrifying scene in the book, the other horrifying scene that we haven't talked about, I had a very nice experience with this cover, which I'll just say really quickly. My agent and I, I'm not used to having a mic in my face. Sorry. My agent and I, right around the time we were talking about edits, I was like, I want to have a Black artist design this cover. Because again, like not the whole point of the book by any means, but just like a focus is like listening to Black people and listening, like promoting Black art, promoting what we are contributing and our talents. And so I was very much like, I want a Black artist. And Atria, my publisher, we made a list, found a couple that they narrowed in on, and one of them was the artist who designed this cover, and his name is Timmy Coker. His Instagram is amazing, check it out. But he had created this artwork, a version of this, for Twitter's Juneteenth banner a couple years ago. And so they asked him and were like, can we license this? And he was like, yeah, and he's so nice about it, and they changed it a little bit, but I highly recommend checking out the art. It's called My Black is Beautiful. But that was one of those examples. I mean, again, it's hard not to be cynical and be like, well, this book is literally about Black people and publishing, so of course they're going to do what I want. But I was just so grateful because it wasn't even a thing, because I've heard horror stories about covers and really trying to appeal to one particular kind of market and being like, oh, well, Black people don't buy books, which is but like that's, I feel like there's a lot of dog whistling, at least at the time, that like, well, this audience is not here. Sure. Thankfully, my publisher was really great and still is great about making sure we are finding every kind of reader, good. Not just one kind of reader.
Good. That's good. What do you think about genre? This book, like, as part of my preparation for this interview, in addition to the pleasure of reading this book, I also looked up, like, you know, articles and reviews and that kind of stuff. Very well reviewed, but I noticed many of the reviews sort of like defined it differently in terms of its genre, and it was compared to everything from like the work of Jordan Peele and kind of like horror and that kind of stuff to. You know, you mentioned the word sci-fi, which is something that occurred to me as I was reading it, mm-hmm. and I am glad to hear you mentioned it as well.
Yeah.
How much is conscious when you were writing, mm-hmm. you know, I'm going to blend these things together, and how much is just like, I'm going to write whatever I want and let other people determine the genre?
Yeah, it was mostly the latter. Mm-hmm. This book is, like I said earlier, I'm all up in this book in terms of like what I enjoy to watch and read. Mm-hmm. When I was creating this book, it's funny because it always makes me think about when I was trying to come up with comms, which is like, this is this book meets this book. And it was really hard because I think I did say Jordan Peele, Get Out, because there wasn't anything necessarily yet, like a book that had done that, or at least I hadn't read it yet. And now there are a bunch. I mean, when no one is watching, Alyssa Cole, her book was amazing, came out a couple years ago. Black Book by Matteo Escarapore, and so many books that are blending kind of satire and other genre elements. But it was hard.
Bless you.
it kind of depends on who I'm talking to. I mean, I think for me, the thing that I feel like I... Where this book came from for me was watching kind of shows like The Twilight Zone, shows like Black Mirror, where they start off in this space that seems very normal, mm-hmm. very everyday. And Rod Serling's like, no, 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 you're going down this rabbit hole with me. Mm-hmm. And I love stories like that. I mean, like Everything Everywhere All at Once, like stories that just like seem like they're one thing and then suddenly there's something else. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that kind of whiplash is like very cathartic and very healing and can also be very fun and that guessing game. And so yeah, like normal with a little bit of a twist.
Yeah.
Which isn't a genre.
When it began to dawn on me that the title has another meaning, it was a good moment as a reader. I was like, oh, hey. This is what she's doing. Okay, I get it.
Thank you.
Do you have a set, and I realize this is your first book, but you also, you know, as a nonfiction writer, whatever, do you have a set of early readers, or are you a very private writer?
Yeah. I mean, my dad, of course, is one of them, one of my biggest critics as well, which is good to have and sometimes too much. Mm-hmm. my partner, but also, I made a lot of, not a lot of, but I made a really good core group of friends who were different genres at the New School, because there's nonfiction, there's fiction, and there's also writing for children. And so I had people from kind of different genres looking at it really early on, and that was great. And also getting different things from different readers. Like, my partner's also very brutally honest, mm-hmm. which is great sometimes, but sometimes I need like my MFA friend who's like, yes, girl, this is great. And so having those two kinds of or four different kinds of voices was really good for me.
I'm aware of the time, and I want to warn everybody, or warn's the wrong word, encourage everybody to start thinking of your questions for Zakiya, because after about two more from me, we're going to open it up to you all. One question I have is, I understand that this is being adapted into a series, mm-hmm. Which is public information.
Yes.
Thank
you.
And I understand that you are a writer on the series. And I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit about what it is like to take something that has come from inside of you and has now become an external product, and to have other people like molding the clay that you have produced into this world.
Yeah, that's such a good, mm-hmm. I feel like you're really good at that. Like, I'm like imagining this brainchild like getting beamed up into a saucer. Anyway, it's weird. That's the whole thing. It's very weird. And at first I thought, this is going to be really hard for me to open up and let people into this thing. I mean, I had done that with my agent. I had done that with my editor. But we had this bond that's very different. Book people are very different, I feel like, than the TV world. And so I was a little nervous at first to, like, let people in. It was optioned right around the time the book sold, and I ended up, after some time, partnering up with Rashida Jones, and so we co-wrote the pilot together. And that was kind of a process that took like a year and some change, and it was all on Zoom, so we're just through everything that's been happening the last couple of years. And I think that was really great because I was able to just have that one-on-one time with someone else who's very much aware of the business and was very much like a mentor, and this is how this goes, and has been setting a really great example, and keeping the integrity of the project has been her biggest concern. So that's felt really nice, and so far everybody else, it's been really great. I'm like knocking on wood because I know it can sometimes not be great, but so far I'm taking it day by day, and it's really exciting to see all the different ways this story can be pulled and these characters can be explored in more ways than I could have ever done in the book.
That's great. I cannot wait to watch it. I will be tuning in. Can you tell us what streaming service it's
on? Oh, yes, Hulu. It's going to be on Hulu.
All right. This can be a yes or no question if you want it to be, or you can elaborate. Do you want to talk about your future projects? Oh. You can just say no.
Yeah. No, I mean, I definitely plan to write another book.
Yeah.
TV show. I have a short story coming out on Amazon. It's an Amazon original coming out in August. It's a little more horror. I guess that's all I'll say. But keep an eye out on my socials.
Yes. Yeah, you are
my
good.
Socials.
You are good at social media.
Really?
Yeah.
My horrified face.
I'm yeah, like, yeah, no, you are.
That's really nice to hear. I don't love it. Like, it's such a time suck in a way, but it really is great because I'm able to meet other authors and, like, see what else is going on and get out of my head.
Are you on TikTok?
That's a frontier. Will never do.
But that's what we are supposed to do
I
now.
I know, the book talk article on the New York Times. Yeah. It sells books. Mm-hmm. I know. Mm-hmm. I think, though, that publishing houses are partner. Like, I think I have a specific, I don't have a TikTok person at Simon & Schuster, but I do have someone who navigates it. Because I'm 29, I feel too old for TikTok. Mm-hmm.
My secret weapon is I have a 14-year-old niece who I had a serious conversation with, and I was like, Ella, do you want to be my intern this summer?
And that's so smart.
Be my TikTok person?
Wait.
Do you want her to be your TikTok person too? I would be like an internship that would be probably more, a little bit more credible on her part if it was not a family member.
We'll talk. TikTok can be a time, like, I don't want her to not have time to do other things too.
I mean, it's summer. She's 14. What else is she going to do? She's going to do our TikToks.
That's true. She's going to do TikTok anyway. Might as well be for a good cause.
She's very smart. She's a good reader.
Love it. I love that.
Okay, so this is my invitation to you to ask Zakiya questions that you may have. I see someone right up front here.
Hi, sorry.
Hi.
I see that you went with a different publisher for your book. Was there a reason that you opted not? Did you pitch it to Knopf? And they just, okay.
Yeah, no, that's a great question. Yeah, so... I did do a different house from where I worked, but we did submit it to a lot of places at Penguin Random House and to that specific imprint. And I worked at two imprints, and we submitted it to both imprints, partly as a courtesy. Like, there are no real people in this book. Like, these are all amalgamations of them. Although some of them, like some people who work there, could maybe point out like that this person maybe is kind of similar to this person. But every house I went to, they're like, I know this person. So that was kind of what I was going for. The other imprints that I did work at, we did have a meeting, and like everything I heard from them was really positive. Of course, I mean, of course, they're not going to say negative things necessarily, but I think that they also know they have a problem, which is like the most baffling and frustrating thing, I think, in a way. But also, it's like, well, okay, at least we can be having this conversation. So that was 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. Thank you for your question. That's a really good question.
Hi. It's nice to see you. Thank you for being here. So you talked a little bit about your creative process and how you came up with the idea for the book. Now, having worked in publishing, did you think about the business strategy? Can you say more about that? And I guess you kind of touched on it just now. And I'm also thinking about the Lit Hub article that references your book while talking about publishing, profiting off of its racism. So yeah. I'm just wondering, how did you think about that? Like, are you surprised by the wild success of this book? Yeah, where did the business strategy come in here?
Thank you. Those are great questions. I did, my agent sent me that Lit Hub piece, and that's actually that from a book that's published by my imprint, which is a very also strange thing. That's a whole other conversation. I was very aware of the business side of things, and I do think that actually I didn't want to think too much about it because I thought that would, I wanted this to be authentic to me first and foremost. And so like, I definitely had thoughts about like, oh, this is like seven genres. How am I going to pitch this book? And like, well, I should probably do this and that. But at the end of the day, I just went with my gut and I changed, I mean, not to get too in the weeds, but like depending on the editor, I queried it differently. So I was like, okay, well, this is a book that has speculative elements, but it's set in our world and it's literary, but then also like if you're into horror. And so I was very mindful of that because like I was saying earlier, the comp situation is everyone's obsessed with comps, even though I think it's not a great system because you can't tell how well a book's going to sell by just how well another book sold. Sorry, I'm going off on a tangent. The business part was definitely in my mind. And then, going back to that article, I think about it all the time. Like, I think about it all the time. And I have people who've asked me, why didn't you self-publish? And I mean, it's a fair question, but in terms of like resources, I just knew I couldn't do that. And I wanted to reach as many people as possible. And at the end of the day, like, I could go around in circles about, you know, oh, this book is literally just feeding into it, and like I'm making money off, and they're making money off of this, and da 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 da. And of course, I've had those thoughts, especially during 2020 when I was doing edits on this book. But again, at the end of the day, I think about the readers and the people who I have talked to and connected to, and Black readers, not all, but many who have felt seen or feel like they've had their experiences shown. And so if I have to like work within the system in this way, not to bring up a theme of the book, but if I had to work within the system to get that, then I feel like it was worth it for me.
Hi, I wanted to ask you about the ending of the book. Did you get reactions differently from white or Black readers?
That's a very excellent question. Thank you. I won't spoil anything, but I mean, my dad was outraged. He was like, why did you do that to yourself? And I was like, I'm not Nella. overall, I have gotten very different responses. But also not really. I think I don't have a spreadsheet of this I do feel like in general it's more about the kind of reader you are that has changed the reactions. So we were talking earlier, and throughout this conversation I've been saying how I really wrote the book I wanted to write and read. And I love endings that are really just like, what? Like, why did this do this to me? Like Rosemary's Baby, Stepford Wives, Get Out, in a different way, but just like endings that could have been so different, but are like, they just leave a taste in your mouth and you just want to talk about them with someone else. So like, I've been getting a lot of different reactions, but it's really depending on the kind of reader. And if you prefer happy endings, you might not necessarily be into this ending. But now you got to read it and find out why. So.
Hi.
Hi.
I just started reading today. I'm a high school English teacher. Yay. And so I was talking with a couple students, and we all got really excited about the book. So anyway, we're all going to read it together. It's kind of a book club.
Thank
so
hope you. It's, I love to hear that.
Yeah. I hope it like is appropriate for high school students and won't get me fired.
There's nothing. There's like some swearing, but there's no like graphic anything.
I'm kidding.
I know. They have TikTok. Like, they've seen it all.
So I found a particular scene so far really fascinating when Nella is, you know, she just has mixed feelings about a certain manuscript.
Yes.
And one of the characters is just written in this like really superficial way. And so I was just wondering if you had like a specific experience that inspired that. I know like maybe you can't name names or maybe you can, but I'm just really curious about what inspired that particular scene.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I know I've had moments like that, so I just was curious about what your experience was. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. No, thankfully, I didn't have that experience that Nella has, where she has to tell a very famous white author that he's written a problematic character. It's very early on in the book. but, I mean, part of that is because, like, almost every single author I worked with for 2.5-3 years in Penguin Random House, the specific place I was working, were white or not black. And so, like, they were also not trying to write black characters. So, I mean, that's a whole other, again, table that for another night. But I think I mostly had in mind just conversations that I've had with my own friends about, you know, is this problematic? Is this racist? How do you say this? Like, I definitely reference it in the book, but the Kylie Jenner Pepsi commercial. Yeah. Just like, how was there no black intern? Was there nobody, like, no one of color working there to like tell them this was a really dumb ad and a bad idea? Mm-hmm. But then is it that person's responsibility to do that? Like, they have a job, they have to make money. So like all of those conversations, and a lot of them that we see with Nella and Malaika and also just like Jesse, and I mean, I'm getting ahead of myself here, but I really wanted to tackle those hard conversations that, like, I still feel like are case by case, and I, like, it depends what day it is, like, how I feel about something, and if I feel like I need to speak up or not, and what does that mean for me? What does that mean for people coming after me? So that's where that came from. So, my experience was not that terrible, thankfully.
Hello, I'm Hi. Enjoying this conversation.
Thank you.
My question is regarding the agent and the editor. You mentioned there's this collaborative spirit between you. How were they initially chosen?
That's a great question. So I, of course, had the inside knowledge a bit, having worked in book publishing, so I knew how the ropes went in terms of, like, first you find an agent and you query and da-da-da. But my particular agent, Stephanie Delman, I did not know her when I was working in book publishing. One of my coworkers, last minute, like at a party, was like, oh, you should consider querying Stephanie. Like, she takes like weird stuff. And I was like, cool. And she's young, and like the lists that she had acquired so far were great. And so that's how I found her. And it was honestly like a first date. Like, I feel like when I talked to her, she just got it. Like, we vibed really well. This was pre-COVID, so we met in person, and so I really got to feel her energy and see what her energy was toward the book, and so that was great. And then my editor, we queried a ton of editors in early 2020, and many of them, most of them are white, because that was partly the landscape at the time. I do think it's maybe gotten a little better, but also people are quitting, so it's maybe still the same, unfortunately. But the editor that I've ended up going with, it was between three, but the one I ended up going with, she's a woman who had worked on Gone Girl. She edited Gone Girl. And I loved Gone Girl. There's a twist in there that's amazing. And I really wanted my book to land in a similar way. And so that was, and also her energy was great and her team was wonderful. And so that's kind of in a quick way how it went.
Hi, I loved your book. I loved the twists and turns, and
I
read it very quickly, and
just
loved it. My question is, I'm a graduate of UVA in Howard. And I note that two of your characters graduated from UVA and Howard. How did you pick those schools?
Well,
being that you're from UNC.
Well, right. So I was like, I can't have all these similarities. That's literally why. But also, I don't know too much about Howard. I know people who went there, but I don't have good friends who went there. But I did look at UVA. I did consider going there. But at the time that I went, I met with this wonderful woman. I can't remember her name, a black woman there. And we're just talking about the energy at UVA at the time. And no campus is perfect, but at the time it was like a much whiter vibe. And she, I don't know, she wasn't telling me not to go there at all, but just very open and honest about it. And various reasons, mostly financial, I ended up going to UNC and just felt more at home there. And so that's partly where UVA came from, because I was aware kind of with how white it was, and also I think, no offense, I think it's a little stuffier than UNC, or at least it was. But it's also a very, like, beautiful campus and a beautiful school. Yeah, okay. I was like, please, Amy. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, of course, the Jefferson, And again, UNC's got its own issues. But, yeah, that's where that came from. And I really wanted to, because, again, my experience at a PWI in the South, I feel like any black person who has gone to the South, not to an HBCU, but has gone to a university that, I mean, at the time UNC had a Confederate statue on campus that finally got toppled over during all the stuff in 2020, and they have a horrible problem with the way that, I mean, yeah, I could go on for a while, but it's just an interesting energy to go into as kind of a Yankee, as someone who I didn't have family in North Carolina. I just went. And so I really wanted to also capture what that does to someone like Nella, who didn't have many black friends. And then she goes to UVA and she still doesn't have her people, and she wasn't in a sorority. She wasn't cool enough to be in one. And so all of those feelings are, I really wanted that to be in Nella.
Hi, how you doing?
Hi.
There seems to be a lot of similarities between you and the character Nella. How were you able to make sure that you didn't become the character in the book and Nella became an independent person?
Yeah, I mean, I'm still figuring that out. Therapy. Therapy has been a big thing. But I think part, like, it is very hard, and I definitely am like, next book, no, I'm not doing this again, in terms of putting myself so much into it. But I do think all writers, in a way, put themselves in their books somehow, in some way. And, yeah, I mean, I think for me, I've overall, it's been hard because it is like I'm talking about so many personal things that I just never really talked about with even just like my friends that I grew up with. And now it's like all in this book, and I'm getting texts, and it's like, wow. But I see the bright side in that, and I also think for me it's looking back on myself when I was in publishing and how different I was and how I was so used to falling back and being an assistant and being in that role. I feel like writing that, I'm hoping I wrote that out of me, that kind of like just go with the flow, and I'm like to think that I'm taking the wheel and being more proactive than I was and than Nella is in the book in a lot of ways. So yeah, but I'm working on it. It's a great question. Check back in later in the year.
Hi, how are you?
Hi, I'm good. How are you?
I really appreciate your sharing not just the whole concept of what the book is about, but the process. And you bring a unique perspective, having been, quote, in the business, having had an MFA. So many people have stories they want to tell and really should be told in order to expand the knowledge that people have of the various experiences and what we can learn from that. You spoke about your, I'm going to refer to them as your beta readers, or people who we get to know that you kind of let take a look at, some of them for different reasons that you might choose them.
Yeah.
What would you recommend, or how would you recommend someone who was not in the business or did not have that experience, how they select or how they would go about choosing or getting an audience with people who would be beta readers? I've read some people who say only it's just me and another person and that's it, But how would you suggest that someone who is not in the business go about deciding who should be those beta readers to give them that kind of first honest, perspective? You had your father, and also you can let family members read it, but, you know, that whole concept, how do you suggest that someone go about selecting that person or those people?
Yeah. Oh, that is a really good question. And I think it depends on the kind of person you are. I mean, I mentioned earlier, I wasn't a social media person, but now I have found this book Twitter world that is out there. And like, there are so many writers who are in the process right now of querying and are looking for that community. And like, I mean, I'm sure there are hashtags, but like, I mean, just from when my book was sold, I made a bunch of specifically Black writer friends who were writing like YA and genre and horror and all through social media. So that's one way. I would also say maybe a book club. If you're in a book club, I feel like people who are readers would be an excellent audience, especially if you feel like I do feel like book clubs help. I mean, you're able to talk to people. You're able to kind of have a more personal relationship and hopefully be able to find someone who gets you, or at least will give you the critiques that you want to get or that you need. And then I'm struggling to remember the name of this, but right after I quit, I was still, or when I was there, I don't know if I can say this, I was doing freelance editorial work on this website where people can kind of send projects, and basically it's a freelance site where you can be hired to edit, and also, so there's another side where you can submit your writing and ask someone to give you feedback. I mean, you pay, but it depends on who it is. Like, you can get a good deal, and but those are just off the top of my head, and I don't remember the name of that, I'm sorry. But those are just a few ways off the top of my head, because it is hard. It's really hard, and I have a hard time sharing my work still to this day. Like, my short story, I like send it to my agent and I was like, I'm not checking my email for days, and like, I'm just gonna walk away, and
it's like the equivalent of like doing this.
Yeah, walking down the street. And so it's hard, but I think when you find that sweet spot of even just one person, once you finish that draft, that is the sweet spot. Mm-hmm. And then that's so hard in itself. And then finding that first person is really crucial.
I feel like somebody else in this room would be a good match.
I know.
People who come to these events, those are your people.
Yeah.
Andy, I feel like you should offer like a editorial matchmaking service to the free library. People who come to the events at the free library, like people who want a reader for their work and vice versa.
Yeah.
There you go.
I mean, that's my suggestion. Like, that's a great idea. And even like, I mean, I don't go on Reddit, mm-hmm. but there's mm-hmm. writing Reddit. Mm-hmm. There's writing everything. Like, mm-hmm. it's, I mean, I know this is all online. I'm like, how do you meet people in person these days? But I do think there must be meetups. There must be meetups. Yeah. And if anyone has any suggestions.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, me? Oh.
You have like 8,000 times more social media followers than I do, so I'm going to defer to you.
No way. No, I don't.
That's
Goodreads.
That might get confusing with actual Goodreads, the site, though.
I stay off of Goodreads for obvious reasons.
Speaking of putting your fingers in your ears.
Yes, that's the ultimate one. But yeah, thank you. Goodreads is a good tip.
Yeah.
Hashtag. Yeah.
Hashtag free library editorial matchmaking services. That's way too
rolls
long.
Out the tongue.
This is why I need Ella.
LSP.
This is why I need a young person in my life.
Hello.
Hi.
I'd love to know what you're reading right now, or if there's anything up and coming that we should be watching out for.
Yes, for sure. Right now I'm reading Not a Happy Family by Shari Lapna. Not a Happy Family is the name of it. It's a thriller. I'm listening to it, actually. Audiobooks have been kind of a lifesaver these days. Very fun page turner. I mean, it's kind of dark. There's murder, but it's a mystery also. So that, I mean, I mentioned earlier There are some really amazing writers who we all published around the same time last year. Mateo Escarapur, who wrote Black Buck, which is very much like a, we call our books brother and sister. We're doing a Bronx Book Fest this weekend with Nana Kwame, I believe, author of Friday Black, which is also another great book, a story collection. Gosh, what else am I reading right now? I'm reading so many things, trying to read so many things right now. I just finished, if people want to keep reading in the publishing world, The Plot by Jean.
I read that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Jean Howe. I'm so bad with
names.
I think
it's Jean Howe. Korolitz or
Korolitz. Yes, Jean Korolitz.
H-A-N-F-F.
Yes.
Hanf.
Yes.
Jean
Hanf. The Plot is all you need to know. It's a also a good audiobook. Naima Coaster, What's Mine and Yours, came out last year. It's this family saga. It's not a thriller for people who are maybe looking for a break. Mm-hmm. Beautiful novel. And then, oh my gosh, of course, Clavis Natera's Neruda on the Park. It just came out a couple weeks ago. Dominican writer. It's just a beautiful book. Go read it. Go buy it. Go take it out at the library. And yeah, so many more. I am, like we said, I'm on social media. I'm trying. I'm struggling sometimes to stay engaged because everything is sometimes too much. But I do try to post about books, too, that I'm reading. And I'm hoping to do that more this summer.
Well, let's give a round of applause to Zakiya Dalila Harris. Thank you so much for coming to Philadelphia. I hope you can visit for real sometime.
I know. I'm sorry I can't hang out longer. But thank you so much, everyone, for coming and your really great questions. And just this, we mentioned earlier really quick, this was my, my first paperback event. Mm-hmm. And it comes out tomorrow. Mm-hmm. So this is, and last year I was mostly on Zoom. So I can't tell you how much this means to me to see all of your faces. So thank you for coming out.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from the Free Library of Great Conversations. If you live in Philadelphia or are planning a visit and would like to attend an author event, information on the series is available at freelibrary.org/authorevents.